Well, good evening again. I'd like to say on your behalf as well as mine just a few thank yous. To put on something like this evening twice back to back requires a huge amount of work and a number of teams. This morning where I'm standing was covered in straw and a huge stable for our wonderful nativity. Goodness knows how many children taking part in that. And the team had to dismantle all that and set up. We had to clear our Spire coffee shop, which normally occupies the whole of this aisle here, and set out extra chairs, not to mention the candles, the decorations, and everything. We've got a team of people who are preparing your mulled wine and mince pies. We've got a technical team that make everything run. But above all, we owe our thanks to the musicians and the singers behind me who have been quite amazing this evening. Let's show a round of applause. Thank you. Our first planning meeting for this evening took place in January, as it does every year, and rehearsals began in the early autumn. And the creative mind behind all of that is Morag, our conductor. And thank you. I don't know whether you were watching the faces. Somebody once said that you can tell what's in the heart of a conductor on the faces of those who are playing and singing. And I think you can tell from the faces of our musicians and singers just what fun they're having. And that was a constant theme as they talked downstairs earlier. So thank you, all of you. So I wonder who's got their Christmas shopping finished. Put up a hand, you're safe, I can't see. So, well, that's pretty impressive, I have to say. I don't know about you, but as life goes on, I find one of the challenging things is to find that particular, unusual, special gift, particularly for my wife, Jackie. It gets harder every year. And this year, I'm really pleased. Don't tell her, because I'm just going to share this with you. But I've found her something. She'd never guess what it's going to be. It's really unusual. I got her a wooden leg. Okay, I mean, it's not going to be her main present, more of a stocking filler. But I'm really pleased with it. Thank you. Oh dear. It's come to a pretty pass when the timpanis are funnier than the vicar, isn't it really? I think that sums things up. Talking about vicars, the Ipsos Mori poll, you know, the polling company, they have for decades been doing an annual survey of trust in the professions, finding out how much people in our community trust those in professions. And this year, the clergy did particularly badly. We were down to 65%. So that means I'm on a loser with 35% of you before I even begin. Do you know who tops the poll nearly every time? Nurses. We got any nurses in? Well done. Fantastic. So if you're ill, see them. Don't come to me. But 94% trust nurses, which is wonderful. And that set me thinking as I read that poll that was published just a few weeks ago. Who do you trust? So I just want you to think for a moment. You're not going to have to say anything, but just think of somebody you trust. I don't mean a profession. I mean an individual. I hope you've got somebody, at least one, probably more people in your life that you trust, but just bring them to mind now. So hopefully that was quick. Hopefully you've got somebody in your mind. And then ask the question, why do I trust them? What makes them trustworthy? And I reckon it would have something to do with the fact that fundamentally they are for you. They're on your side. They back you. They think well of you. They celebrate your successes. They sit with you in your pain. And above all, they want you to thrive. That's what it means when somebody is for you. So who in the world is for you today? I think even one generation ago, that would have been a relatively simple question. It would have been defined in terms of politicians and policemen and teachers and probably clergy. But the world in which we live today is far less simple, far more complicated than that. And you can see virtually across the entire planet the breakdown in trust where once it would have been assumed. It's a far more complicated question today to ask, who do you trust? Who is for you today? Are our politicians for you? Is capitalism for you, or socialism, Corbyn or May, Twitter or Facebook? Is anything really for you? Well, let's put it a different way. If you are a woman and you're the target of the sort of behavior from men that clearly for decades, it's not just the assault, not just the abuse, but the acceptance that has clearly been given to that pattern of behavior. Or what if you're rich and it must feel at times as if you're a target for everybody? Or if you're on benefits moving to universal credit and you've got to wait that 6 weeks and you're kept going by the sort of food bank that churches like ours fund and support. Who is for you? Or if you're a Muslim living in the UK today and certain parts of the UK and you're the target for ignorant hatred and abuse. And actually, you could replace the word Muslim with any of the words that we use to make distinctions over against different sections of the human family. And when you think about it, it's the most extraordinary thing to do. Any act of discrimination against somebody because they represent difference is a blow against our very humanity. It's no wonder that people say that acts of discrimination dehumanize both perpetrator and victim. Every act of discrimination is both wrong and damaging to what it means to be human, but simply because over the last few months there has been such a focus on the assault and abuse of women by men, whether it be in Hollywood or Westminster or the workplace, that I want to say a few words about that. And I want to try to persuade you this is not simply a vicar going all trendy. This actually, as a Christian, goes right to the very heart of what we believe. I'm not saying the church has always done a good job on this, but the church needs to do better, because whatever you believe about the opening two chapters of Genesis, the way the Bible begins, whether you believe it to be an historical account or whether it's a myth with a message, the message is clear. That when God looked for a creature to bear his image, to be his likeness, to be a chip off the old block, to show the world what God was like, he had to create both a man and a woman jointly together to be human. Ian Wedd, who writes our amazing sonnets and creative pieces year by year, had that question at the end of the second stanza of his sonnet this evening. Is this really the world God said was good? Well, in fact, there was only one part of God's creation that at the end of the working day he could not lean back and say with satisfaction, "Do you know that's good?" And I'm sorry to break this to half of you, but that was man. Without woman, incomplete. Only male and female, only men and women together can fully image God's likeness to this world. And as I said, I'm aware that the church has not always done this well. But at least in this one place, and of course there are many, let us declare that women and men are together equal in the human family and have equal roles to play. They say, don't they, that, with good reason from the evidence, that the only certainty life offers is its end. Who's for you when you face that end? Who's for you when you are elderly and in need of care? If you step only a few paces beyond the Christmas stories in our Bibles, if you take a look at what Jesus did when he grew up, you will meet a man who was for all of the categories I've mentioned, rich, poor, male, female, those of different faiths, those marked by difference, those shunned by others and their own society. We discover a Jesus who is for you. He's on your side. He thinks well of you. He celebrates your successes. He sits with you in your pain. And above all, he wants you to thrive. Christmas is only the start of the story, and I know you know that. Two of the Gospels, the four accounts of the life of Jesus, Matthew and Luke, begin with the story of Jesus' birth. God come in baby form, placed in wood, its cross pieces nailed to make a trough to feed animals. 30-something years later, this same God, now a grown man, is laid on wood, nailed to its cross pieces, to become something that would feed every hungry heart, every famished soul. It's not so much what you can or must do that counts, so much as what he has done. It's not actually what you think of yourself or speak over yourself that has the final word of your life, but rather what he thinks of you and speaks over you. It's not who or what is for or against you, but that he is always for you. In fact, were the whole world against you, and he alone for you, he tips the balance eternally in your favor every time. Ultimately, it's not even the inescapable fact that your life and my life will end that will have the last word. The last word is found in the fact that he has taken on death at its own game and beaten it hands down. I was born in London. My parents moved when I was 6 weeks old. By the time I found them, they were living in the Lake District, which was a wonderful place to grow up. And we used to go back and visit London and visit grandparents and that sort of thing. And I remember one of my earliest memories as a child is my fear of the tube, that hot breath and rushing noise of the dragon I was convinced was about to emerge from the tube tunnel, the crashing, creaking, rolling, rocking train as it ground to a halt at the platform. And those very correct male English words, particularly on the Bakerloo line that said, mind the gap. And I was convinced that I was going to fall into that gap and never stop falling. And I suppose, in a way, moving from platform to train was an act of faith. And I think there's something like that in the journey of faith. Somebody like me is utterly powerless to move you from one to the other. I can maybe narrow the gap so that it seems more reasonable to step across. But in the end, it's like one of those quiz games. You must make your choice. You can phone a friend. You could ask the congregation. Can't do 50-50 because it already is. It's a simple yes or no how we respond to the great question of life. Ultimately, the choice is yours, and you've got to decide. Is God for you? Is God for everyone? Is God for life, not just for Christmas? Thank you for listening so politely, as you always do.